think about that time, 1984, you know, it is one of the best times and one of the worst times in my life. It was the best time because from the recording to, I mean, going out on tour and that being, I mean, probably the biggest production we ever went out with on tour. I mean, I remember days just standing back and looking at that thing during the day in awe going, God, and here's these four guys acting like knuckleheads under this huge, massive thing, you know. Right up until the time to where, you know, Dave left the band, which was probably one of the saddest times of my life. But, yeah, I mean, I'll always think back on, you know, 1984 is really something special, actually.
I would rather bomb with my own music than make it doing someone else's music.
Hi, I'm Alex Van Halen, and you're not.
Hey, this is Eddie Van Halen in the studio.
Hey, Michael Anthony from Van Halen here, and I'm in the studio right now for the anniversary of Van Halen's 1984 album.
There is an important disclaimer that needs to be made here in this Van Halen rockumentary about the making of the 1984 album and the many personnel changes that occurred after. While the first five albums and 5 years of Van Halen's recording career were stable and united in building them into America's most popular hard rock band, the enormously successful 1984 album 30 years ago and its subsequent sold-out tour closed that chapter of the original band, comprised of Eddie and Alex Van Halen, Michael Anthony, and David Lee Roth. Since then, the Van Halen story has been a never-ending soap opera that has been nothing but constant controversy for three long decades, as recently as 2012's mid-tour cancellation due to Eddie Van Halen's long history of medical problems, including substance abuse. While the facts contained in this 1984 rockumentary remain true and accurate regardless of the time, the opinions expressed by Van Halen original members Eddie, Alex, and Michael clearly are a snapshot of just one of the many chapters in this saga at a time before David Lee Roth was invited back into the band and before Michael Anthony was dismissed. When Van Halen issued their debut 6 years earlier, an album hailed to this day as a benchmark for melodic hard rock, with sales over 10 million on that one, Van Halen was told by their record company that their debut had not yielded a hit single, and thus Van Halen should modify their choice of songs. Fact, every subsequent Van Halen album would be a million seller and go top 10, and their fifth, 1982's Diver Down, actually peaked at number 3 on the sales chart. But half of Diver Down was comprised of cover tunes, oldies that the band would have played in their formative years, doing four sets a night on the Sunset Strip. Van Halen's original members Eddie and Alex Van Halen, plus Michael Anthony, all agree that sales were high, but after five albums with the same record company and producer, so was the tension. Here's first Alex, then Eddie Van Halen with me in the studio.
There are a number of different people involved in making a record. There's the band, there's the producer, and there are the executive producers, and there are people at the record company. And when you first walk in fresh, it's not your place to sit there and tell these people what to do.
Especially when you don't have a clue, you know, you're just going,
and so,
why is it going like this?
And
I didn't know what this is how it was going to be.
So you respect
ignorance, you know.
You respect what other people think is the right thing to do. And the old cliche used to be that if you take a song that was a hit in the past, you're halfway there. So I used to ask, well, halfway there doesn't quite cut it for me. You know, that's like, that's like being with a woman that's half naked, you know.
Well, as long as
of course, I know. Well, which half? But that was the basic philosophy. And again, you know, in a band where you're running things by committee, you have to be flexible. You know, there's not one person who calls all the shots. And if somebody wants to do a particular song, and we were all open to doing it, well, then we would give it our best shot.
And so damn diplomatic, it's making me sick.
But that's the truth.
Diver Down, our fifth record, had half cover tunes. And I had it personally up to here with it. That's why I built a studio. I would rather bomb with my own music than make it doing someone else's music.
Covered Roy Orbison's Pretty Woman on 1982's Diver Down album. Around their fourth album, Fair Warning, Eddie Van Halen shared his home studio idea with Van Halen bass player Michael Anthony.
He had talked about it for a while, but it was after the Fair Warning, or during that time, that I knew that he was interested in doing it. And it was just going to be a thing where, you know, the band, where we would record and rehearse and be just for the band. And I think around the time that he was doing that too, there was some controversy going on or something about privately owned studios that people were making money on recording bands in their studios. And I think they tried to jump on Ed for that also early on at one point. But it was funny because he built this structure, and it wasn't really, I don't know if I should say this, if anyone's going to hear, to code. Or he was supposed not. He wasn't supposed to be building a recording studio there. So he told the inspectors and everybody that it was a racquetball court. So we actually did play some racquetball in it. But that's when we kind of passed it off for the permits and everything, and it sounded good and everything was great. And the studio was only like half finished. I remember there was outboard gear and there were things that were just nailed or screwed into the 2x4s. There wasn't even any drywall or soundproofing in the control room or anything like that. We just kind of, for a long time too, just kind of left it like that. We wanted a little more control over the recording process. But I mean, there was no real master plan, but it was like, this is going to be our place and nobody can penetrate it, and the record company can't come here unless we invite them. And this is going to be our place where we can come day or night, whatever, and just make music, record our music, and have a good time doing it. And that's kind of what the premise was.
Some seeds of discontent had been sown within Van Halen over the years. By fall 1983, when it was time to record a sixth album, the seeds had taken root amidst the pressures of constant touring and recording, conspicuous consumption, and mismanagement. The rock press lined up for outrageous quotes and antics from Van Halen original lead singer David Lee Roth, while music aficionados were mesmerized by Eddie Van Halen's inventive guitar techniques. It seemed to work okay in the short term, but two distinct factions grew out of it. Again, Michael Anthony.
All I ever personally wanted to just be in a band and play bass and have a great time, and I know Ed and Al feel the same way. You know, we all love playing music. It is true when they say singers are a breed apart. With Dave and also Sammy, now they were pretty outspoken guys. I think, you know, in the early days, Ed, Al, and I, after a while, like when it got to be around the 1984 and around that time, Dave, I remember him saying that he wanted to take care of most of the interviews, and he was really into that. And us three were saying, well, that's great. You can do that because we want to play and focus on the music. And it's kind of weird. I think, you know, Ed, Al, and myself, it's always been about the music. And, you know, in the early days, we were kind of content to let the lead singer take care of the flash and the glamour and the clothes. I remember Roth was always saying, hey, you guys should wear this and wear that and whatever. And before I even joined Van Halen, I wore nothing more than jeans and a T-shirt when I played in a band. And so, I mean, next thing you know, I'm wearing gold lame, and I was like, whoa, what's going on here?
Oh,
featuring Alex Van Halen's four on the floor kick drums, driving the song about singer David Lee Roth's Panama red import sports car. That's Panama from Van Halen's album 1984. Van Halen had been teamed with veteran producer Ted Templeman ever since their spectacular debut, but by graduating to their own recording studio in Eddie Van Halen's backyard, an umbilical cord of sorts was cut, according to Michael Anthony.
I think at that point now it was really becoming Van Halen sound. We were comfortable enough in the studio, and it wasn't like we came in from 12 noon till 6 or whatever, and we had that time to get our sounds and whatever. And like you said, Ted Templeman, he had a sound. And I mean, if you listen to like the Doobie Brothers album and Van Halen 2, or Linda Ronstadt and Van Halen 2, you know, I mean, I always thought like a couple of those early albums, I thought, man, I sound just like Linda Ronstadt's bass player because the way my bass was just kind of flat in there. But now it was like, you know, we can go in the studio and really dial in the sound that we want. And I think that was, you know, one of the great things about building the studio, because we were able to finally start doing that. In fact, you put on Hot for Teacher, and I guarantee you turn the volume up, and at the end, Al's doing fills on his toms that would blow your speakers out. You know, because it was during that album that we kind of broke away from Ted then, you know, because it was like, hey, we can do our own thing here, you know? It's okay. It wasn't that we were, you know, everyone was becoming prima donnas and, hey, we want to control the whole thing or whatever. But it was more like, you know, we discovered that, hey, we have our own sound here. And, you know, let's explore this. Let's, you know, and certain things, you know, we didn't see eye to eye with Ted on. And, you know, it was no like real big, you know, falling out, fighting match or whatever, but you know, we kind of said, hey, it's time to move on here.
Never. I don't feel dirty.
That's the song whose video made MTV blush back in 1984 with Van Halen's Hot for Teacher. Up next, Van Halen leaps vertically to the top of the charts. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and a whole lot more at InTheStudio.net. I'm Redbeard. You're in the studio with Eddie and Alex Van Halen plus Michael Anthony for Van Halen's album 1984.
Hi, I'm Alex Van Halen, and you're not.
Hey, this is Eddie Van Halen in the studio.
Hey, Michael Anthony here, and I'm in the studio right now for the anniversary of Van Halen's 1984 album.
Welcome back in the studio for the Van Halen's blockbuster album, 1984. I'm Redbeard. Alex Van Halen takes the direct approach when it comes to composing their music in the studio.
When you sit in this room and you crank the volume to 115 dB and Ed plays something, it either affects you or it doesn't. There's no talking that needs to be done. It was just there. I have film of when Ed first played Jump, and he played it for hours and hours on end. And it's just funny, the camera cruises around. No, it's in its embryonic stage. But it had a magic to it. It didn't take a genius to figure out, hey, this is gonna be a great song.
Van Halen's first bona fide number one hit song, that's Jump from the 1984 album. After revolutionizing guitar playing and perennially topping guitar player polls, it's notable that Eddie Van Halen composed and arranged their breakthrough hit on keyboards. Here's Michael Anthony, formerly of Van Halen.
I remember when he first played pieces of Jump for Dave, you know, it was like, yeah, okay, you know, it was the whole Guitar Hero bit, you know, you're not a keyboard player, don't play keyboards. And I think at that point, Ed was saying, well, damn it, that's it. You know, this is Van Halen, and anything that we do is going to sound like Van Halen. And so let's whatever we feel, let's put that out. Let's not be controlled by what we should write, or, you know, we should write a hit that sounds like this or whatever. Let's do our own thing. And I think more than ever before that when 1984 was coming about, that's the way Ed was feeling. And he said, this is my keyboard tune. This is a great tune, and we should put it on the album.
Upon release of the song Jump, Van Halen's 1984 album sold 3 million copies in its first 3 months. Coupled with high-profile Max Rotation videos on the then-new media darling MTV, David Lee Roth writes in his autobiography Crazy from the Heat, quote, "The more records you sell, the more isolated you are, the less people say what's really on their mind. You become very isolated in your fame," end quote. Michael Anthony, on the other hand, saw it somewhat differently.
I mean, unfortunately, I didn't hang out with Dave at all because, you know, at that point, you know, it was like we just, you know, I didn't see things like that because I am a very kind of personable guy, and I like, you know, I'm a regular person, and I have to thank my parents for bringing me up like that, but I've never really, you know, lost, sight of that, or, you know, my upbringing or whatever you'd like to call it. And on the road, of course, sometimes, you know, you play the role and whatever, you know, if we'd all go out to a function or whatever. But, on a day off, I just wanted to go out and hang out and be myself. And I didn't want to have security guards around me. I didn't want to be a rock star. You know, I never considered myself a rock star. I was considering myself a bass player. I almost consider myself the Bill Wyman of the band, you know. I just sit back there and I play bass. And when I'm done playing bass, I just want to be a regular guy. I don't like to talk about myself, but I always consider myself pretty centered, and, you know, everybody goes, yeah, Mike, you know, you're that one guy that never, you know, you're always like straight on line, right down there, you know, right down the middle. And, be it live or whatever, you know, I'm there to do my job, and I love doing it.
Just
Van Halen's multi-platinum 1984 album, that's Drop Dead Legs. Up next, amidst their greatest success, tensions sever Van Halen in two and threaten the band's very existence. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and you can hear a whole lot more at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard. You're in the studio with Eddie and Alex Van Halen, plus Michael Anthony, for the 1984 album.
Hi, I'm Alex Van Halen, and you're not.
Hey, this is Eddie Van Halen in the studio.
Hey, Michael Anthony here, and I'm in the studio right now for the anniversary of Van Halen's 1984 album.
Thank you. I'm Redbeard. Van Halen went from stardom to superstardom over the course of the year and album 1984, previously selling out arenas. Now Van Halen had to spend up to three nights in each major city to try to accommodate their fans. All the while, intra-band problems persisted. Here's original Van Halen bass player and harmony singer Michael Anthony.
There was growing tension within the band, and it was becoming more of a job than being fun, you know. At some point, you know, all of a sudden you start, you get people that gain a little wealth, a little notoriety, and all of a sudden, sting, it goes right to their head. And, you know, just from my observation, you know, Dave was like, he was pretty well caught up in the whole thing about what Van Halen was and how big we had grown. And I think that really contributed to, like, the growing tension between him and the rest of the band. He was definitely thinking about himself and that I am a big part of Van Halen, or I am Van Halen, or whatever, you know. And we were, Ed Allen and I were the backup band, you know. But he never once came to me to ask me, you know, as far as that goes, because I mean there was a little bit of friction between Dave and me at that point anyway. So
from Van Halen's 1984 album, that's I'll Wait. The tension among the members of Van Halen during the 1984 tour was either abated or intensified, depending on who you talk to, by their road manager and later personal manager, Noel Monk. I asked former Van Halen bass player Michael Anthony to characterize Noel Monk.
A piece of work. No, we used to always call him Little Caesar. He was the kind of guy, he was a security guy. That's how he started out with us. And his big thing, I mean, he'd have the Soldier of Fortune magazines piled up a mile high all around him. And even after he became our manager, he had himself a house out here in California in a city called Eagle Rock that was barred. And, I mean, you go down in his basement and he had guns locked up and he had food and water enough for like 3 months. And I mean, because he kind of like ran the whole operation that way too. When we go out on tour, we had no less than about 7 or 8 security guys at any one time. Usually they were always around Dave because Dave was the one who demanded it. But I mean, these guys all had nicknames like Hacker and Slasher and whatever. And, you know, we'd be on our way to the show and they'd be going on the walkie-talkie, hey, this is Slasher, we got a Wild Cherry coming in. And it kind of, the whole thing, he ran like kind of like a military operation. The early part of it, we were so busy partying and having a good time that it probably was good because he kept us in check a lot of the time. I hate to go back to this again, but, you know, us being so new with everything, I mean, from the management to lawyers or whatever, we had no idea what was going on. I mean, I when Noel managed the band, I think we had at least 2 or 3 different lawyers. And it was one of those things where you needed a lawyer to come in to decipher what your lawyer was trying to say, because we really didn't know what was going on. You know, we'd look at each other, they go, sign this, you're going to blah, 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 and would go, oh, okay, you know, no problem. So we were kind of like not oblivious to it, but, you know, we were kind of pretty ignorant as to the whole management and the money and all that stuff in the beginning also. I guess the record company back then was kind of afraid that we were going to go out on our first tour and kill ourselves. They wanted to make sure that we were around to at least fulfill our contract. But he went on to become our manager. And actually, he managed us until right after the 1984 tour. And it was right before Roth left the band that we fired him. Actually, the firing of him kind of is what kind of got the whole ball rolling and the whole thing with Roth happening and then him leaving the band.
The echoes of the grueling yet record-setting 1984 Van Halen tour were still dying when lead singer David Lee Roth announced his own solo album, complete with video and side band.
I think it was right after the tour, right after 19, or maybe even during the tour. I know that he had talked about doing something, you know, like whether it be like, hey, yeah, you know, I like to cut my own thing, kind of like a Sinatra type deal, you know. I think he looked at himself as doing something like that, you know. I mean, I always felt that he probably one day would do it because there were songs that he'd go, yeah, Louis Armstrong, you know, and he'd start singing like that, or this person, yeah, start singing like that. And I always knew that he wanted to go off and do something on his own, but it was when it was going to happen. And when I first heard about it, all I remembered thinking was California Girls singing, God, you could have done anything more wrong for the band or the image of the band at that point, you know. And I think he was testing the waters that whole time because there was a lot of tension on the road during the 1984 tour. You know, I admit that. There were, you know, there were nights where there were close to some, you know, fist fight type deals going on. And we could tell that there was a lot of tension going on right now. But Roth, he was the kind of guy that I don't think he was underhanded to like deliberately plan something. If he wanted to do something, he came right out and did it. And there was no like, I don't think there was any like scheming or, you know, hey, I'm just going to sit back and wait till this time and do that to the band, you know. I think he was testing the water, you know. And then when he decided to do this EP, and it was all like jumbled up in a time to where we were having problems with our manager and there were skeletons coming out of the closet there. And everybody was pretty mixed up at that time. And I think maybe just off the top of my head looking back, you know, I think maybe he just saw that as the perfect time to go in there and do that EP that he did, do the California Girls Sing and test the water.
Lead guitarist Eddie Van Halen.
feeling.
He blindsided us because he did that Crazy from the Heat thing, and I thought that would relieve some of his creative tension or whatever was happening with him, and that he'd be fresh to come back and do another record. Instead, he quit, and we were in shock.
Things appeared very bad for Van Halen upon singer David Lee Roth's exit in mid-85, but within a year, Van Halen would again top the charts. But Van Halen's Michael Anthony remembers it as quite a roller coaster in 1984.
I mean, that's part of the premise in, you know, writing the music, that we try not to date anything. I mean, we just don't think about what's going on at the time while the music being written or whatever. And hopefully the music that comes out of your heart is truly out of your heart and from you and not from what you've heard the week before or what you think's going to sell. When I think about that time, 1984, you know, It is one of the best times and one of the worst times of my life. It was the best time because from the recording to, I mean, going out on tour and that being, I mean, probably the biggest production we ever went out with on tour. I mean, I remember days just standing back and looking at that thing during the day in awe going, God, and here's these four guys acting like knuckleheads under this huge, massive thing, you know. Right up until the time to where, you know, Dave left the band, which was probably one of the saddest times of my life. But yeah, I mean, I'll always think back on, you know, 1984 is really something special, actually. Some friends of mine just the other night went to hear this cool cat blow. They said he sang so good that the roof fell in and he didn't even stop the show. They don't remember the plays, but they remember the face, and now everybody.
I'm Redbeard, back in the studio after this.